Welcome to Respect Life Radio. My name is Deacon Jeff Bennett with Catholic Charities of the Archdiocese of Denver. And remember, you can listen to all of our shows at respectliferadio.com. Today, our guest is Father Robert Spitzer. Father Spitzer is president of the Magis Center of Reason and Faith. He was president of Gonzaga University from 1998 to 2009. He's also the author of 18 books, including the award-winning New Proofs for the Existence of God. He's authored many scholarly articles on faith, science, metaphysics, happiness, and ethics. And Father also has his own weekly EWTN radio show called Father Spitzer's Universe. Father, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, it's great to be with you again, Deacon. Thank you.
Well, I really love your new book that we're going to talk about, The Four Levels of Happiness, Your Path to Personal Flourishing, through Sophia Institute Press. And this is your second book on happiness, The Four Levels of Happiness. Why did you write this? Why did you write this book? And who is your target audience for this?
Right. My first book was really written for a Catholic audience with, a little bit of theological education. This book is written for a much broader audience, so it could be Christians and Catholics, but it could also be people who are just still searching for faith in one respect or another. So I wanted to really open it up to a wider audience, and so I had less appeal to specifically Catholic themes, though I'm trying to build the case for the fourth level of happiness, which is transcendent happiness or faith-based happiness. So I, my first thing was to get that wider audience because people were telling me, man, this book, it can apply to just about anybody. So you should really do something, much wider. And so I did. And then I thought, well, at the same time, I should write it with a more popular tone, less technical, less philosophical. Obviously, I'm a philosopher of science and a philosopher in general. I speak oftentimes in technical language. And so I really tried in this book not to be as technical, but almost much more popular and more accessible, not just to a wider audience, but also to an audience that's not, looking for a technical book, but looking for something that'll really enable them to move up the scale of happiness there, the ladder of happiness, without, a great deal of, shall we call it, mental consternation. So I gave it a real popular tone. So that was my reason for writing it.
Well, and I think you definitely accomplished it. And, as you sit back and you look at the world and you see, the suicide rates, the depression, the anger, right? Broken families. I mean, it's really, it can almost be disheartening when you look at it that people are looking for this happiness in all these wrong places. But how difficult is it? If you're a child growing up in a broken, dysfunctional family, to even know what happiness is?
Oh, absolutely. It's very difficult indeed. And, Aristotle, actually, he confronted a similar problem. He was teaching a whole group of students and, and his challenge was they were coming from all over the place. Now, they probably didn't have broken families like we do today in such great numbers, but they surely had a huge span. And so his challenge, was to make a very general appeal too. He does it in the Nicomachean Ethics in a way that, his students, I think, could really understand. But for our standards today, even that is pretty technical because you'd almost have to have a classical or philosophical education before you could you could really get what Aristotle's saying straight on. So I just tried to bring the message down to a popular level. It means the same thing that Aristotle was trying to convey, and which, of course, St. Thomas Aquinas and St. Augustine, well, not so much St. Augustine recognized it from Aristotle, but from Plato, but St. Thomas Aquinas recognized from Aristotle and tried to also to convey it in a popular way in the Summa Contra Gentiles. And of course, he has his own tractate on happiness as well. So, this has gotten conveyed to generations upon generations of Catholics, but I wanted to put in the scientific aspects of it too, because there's so much good scientific evidence for God, the soul, for transcendence that I just can't leave out this evidence, today that was just never available to any previous generation. But again, I put it in as popular a language as I could. Now, I got to admit that in chapter 10 and 11, when I'm talking about the transcendentals, and when I get to chapter 12 and I talk a little bit about the scientific evidence for God, or I talk about near-death experiences that are, peer-reviewed medical journals, I did get a little technical there, but only because of the need for accuracy. But basically, I think I really kept the tone where it needed to be. So anyway, I'll just leave you with that thought.
Yeah, well, but you did, though. You kind of led people into those later chapters, right? So they were ready for what you had to say. But, I think, even if you look at, just kind of secular surveys that are going out there, right? They lead to people who have religious affiliations and practice their faith tend to be happier people, right? People in intact and loving marriages tend to be happier people. So you're able to show through secular sources, or prove through secular sources, that, this isn't something that we're just trying to get you to convert. This is just a fact that is true, and people can see it whether they have faith or not, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, let's face facts. The American Psychiatric Association certainly doesn't have a religious axe to grind. If anything, they oftentimes move in the opposite direction. But anyway, when you get a survey from the American Psychiatric Association that says, yes, non-religiously affiliated people, those who don't have any religion whatsoever, have significantly higher rates of depression and anxiety, antisocial aggressivity, substance abuse, familial tensions, suicidal contemplation, and suicides. I mean, we're talking doublings and triplings, if you don't have religion compared to those who do have religion. That's a shocking, stunning statistic that people need to look at. And by the way, I cite six studies since the Kenita Dervik American Psychiatric Association study that confirmed the very same thing. Religious people are not only happier with less depression and anxiety and suicidal ideation, substance abuse, and familial tension, but those religious people, they have more significance in their lives. Their marriages last longer. Their marriages are more satisfying. Those religious people also find themselves relationally with friends across the board. They find that they have much more deep relationships with others, relationships that do include some of that transcendent or religious component. And furthermore, obviously, from a spiritual point of view, they feel connected with absolute meaning and reality. They have a sense of really being moored in the absolute, moored in the totality of things, that they do have a meaning and a hope that's not just eternal, though certainly eternal, and beyond that, even, one that reaches out and is anchored in perfect truth, perfect love, perfect justice, goodness, perfect beauty, and perfect home. So these are the advantages of religion, and they certainly come out. I mean, you can see, for example, in the atheistic existential movement, the huge differential increase in what I call, cosmic or spiritual emptiness, spiritual alienation, loneliness, what Sartre calls nausea, right? What Camus would call, alienation from self and the world, et cetera. All of these things, afflict people without religion, and they really have much, much less effect on people who do have religion. And as I said, it's not just the emotional health that's much better and the spiritual health that's much better. It's also the relational health and the marital health that are also much better. So, religion, you can say, qualitatively makes a huge difference in happiness and in quality of life, no question.
And, you know, as you go through these four levels, whether it's in this, you know, your first book or this book, you really, when you look at the first two levels, you can see why, you know, people are buying into basically, it feels like fool's gold, things that are going to make them happy. And it just leads them to despair because it doesn't make happiness. I remember a couple many years ago thought if we move to a bigger house, that will help our marriage, right? So stuff was going to fix things. And really maybe talk about these first two levels and how they can be a trap for people when they think this is what really happiness is.
Oh, yeah. I mean, in the United States, 70% think that's what happiness really is. And they wind up having what I call the negative emotions of the comparison game. But basically, in a nutshell, level one is materialistic and pleasure satisfaction. So it's some kind of happiness that comes from outside and, you know, stimulates you in some way. So if you eat a good bowl of linguine, you say, I feel happy. You have a great ice cream cone, I feel happy. Or you turn around and you say, I got a brand new Mercedes 500 E-Class with the smell of new leather upholstery. I feel happy. I feel happy with the German engineering that I'm experiencing as I'm going around the curves, et cetera, et cetera. So let's call level one then something external, something stimulating you from outside, something that's enhancing you from outside. Materialistic things like a car or just pleasure like, you know, bowl of linguine, a great glass of wine, etc. Then you move up to level two and it gets a little bit more abstract, less concrete. But nevertheless, it's called ego comparative happiness. We all desire it. And in American culture, this is the dominant form of happiness. We believe in the United States, the majority of us, that our true happiness and success will come from ego comparative happiness. So who's achieving more? Who's achieving less? If you're achieving more, you're happy. Who's got more power? Who's got less power? If you got more power, you're happy. Who's more popular? Who's less popular? If you're more popular, you're happy. Who's got more intelligence? Who's got less intelligence? If you've got more intelligence and you're recognized for having more intelligence, you're happy. Who's more beautiful? Who's less beautiful? Who's, you know, you get the point. Who's more athletic? Who's less athletic? Who's overall more successful in the eyes of the world? Who is less so? Who's a winner? Who's a loser? So you can get the great, you know, the point, and you can see how American culture is just dominated, you know, by this desire to be in the ego comparative, front seat there, to have the recognition, not only the recognition, but also to have the power and, you know, the benefits that come with that, ego comparative advantage, even going to the right school like Harvard or something can give you all the advantages that you want. So to make a long story short, that's level two, and that's the dominant one. The problem with investing ourselves totally with level one and level two is twofold. The first thing, of course, is it's not enough for any of us, right? We're all made with transcendent souls. So we desire some kind of absolute context. That's why religious people are so much happier than non-religious people. That's why contributive people, I'll talk about that as level three in a moment, are happier than non-contributive people. But you can say, oh yeah, on that very superficial level of pleasure, material, toys and things of that, nice house, nice car, and on the level of ego comparative advantage, you know, I'm more recognized than you, more powerful than you, more popular than you. And of course, doors open when I come into the room with my popularity, and everybody else is just, a hoi polloi compared to me. And of course, people will die to get more of that happiness, but you're left alone. You're empty, you're alienated, you're lonely, you feel a sense of dread, of a loss of meaning, right? And you, because it's not enough. You need contributive happiness, you need transcendent happiness, you need to be with God, you need to have some kind of an absolute meaning that's grounded in love, and an absolute meaning that's grounded in the infinite, the total, the perfect. So that's, you don't have it, you're empty, you're alienated, you're lonely. But there's a secondary problem, which I call the comparison game. In other words, you're going to start doing that. Who's achieving more? Who's achieving less? Who's got more power? Who's got less power? Who's more intelligent? Who's less intelligent? Who's more popular? Who's less popular? You're going to start playing the game. And when you start playing the game, you can't win this game. I mean, if you lose the game, obviously, depression's going to come on in a hurry. Inferiority is going to come on in a hurry. Jealousy of others is going to come on in a hurry. You're going to feel like people are judging you 24/7. This is going to be a miserable life. If you really want to be a winner, if you really want ego comparative happiness, if that's what really matters in life, whatever you do, don't lose, right? Don't be a loser. So that's the first thing. Well, you say, well, how about being a winner? That's sure to make me happy. Then I'll have everything that I want. No, you really won't. Because, of course, if you are a winner, you've got to deal with three other problems. The first problem is you can never make a mistake in public. Remember, you're going to have to create those facades. And if you're creating those facades, don't make a mistake. Because if you do make a mistake, I'm telling you right now, you're going to, like I remember once in a physics class in senior year of high school, I'm making a presentation, right? And in that presentation, I was calling, spectroscopy. I was calling it spectroscopy because I'd only read the word. I didn't, hear it pronounced.
Right.
So it was very, very funny. I went home after this nice student in the class said, Spitzer, that word spectroscopy, you're pronouncing it spectroscopy, and now everybody believes you're a consummate idiot. I said, I went home, played that tape 100 times, had suicidal feeling. I'm not kidding you, suicidal feeling, mispronouncing the word, because just this guy, laid me out. But I depended so much on that ego comparative happiness. I don't have to tell you. I mean, I see this happening all the time with kids who are devastated because they didn't make it into Harvard, or they didn't do this, or they didn't do that, and they just have nothing else to live for. No religion, no contribution, no real difference. They were staking everything on being the best, and they're not the best. Nobody's going to ever be the best. Somebody's always going to come along and better you and best you. I mean, it's just the way it is. But, the fact is, don't make a mistake in public. And by the way, eco-comparative happiness, you're going to have to find somebody to blame, if things start falling apart, So you're going to find yourself in states of self-pity, ego rage, ego blame, right, where you're just constantly angry all the time, with people, and, of course, contempt. The loveliness of contempt, as St. Augustine would say, the contemptuous person winds up to being the lonely person, right? Because the contemptuous person thinks he's better than everybody else. And, some poor guy comes walking down the hallway and he holds him in contempt. And of course, finally, these people who have some self-respect finally say, hey, I don't need this guy and I don't need him to approve of my existence. And so they start ignoring the contemptuous guy who is yearning for their approval at all times. And I can tell you that, when they see the contemptuous guy walking down the hall, they're poised for flight. They don't want to be put down. They don't want the contemptuous look. So, of course, Augustine, as usual, is right. Yeah, contemptuous people wind up being the loneliest people in the world because nobody can stand them but their mothers. So the main thing, of course, is having, all these things sort of, going for you, as it were. If you've got ego comparative happiness, winning is not going to help you anyway. you'll still feel empty, alienated, and lonely because, of course, winning's not enough. And you'll still feel all the pressures and problems, the fear of loss of esteem, the fear of failure, the inferiority, the superiority, the contempt, the ego rage, ego blame, inferiority, all of the other wonderful self-pity, et cetera, that goes along with it. I mean, it's a horrible way to live. And people, you know, they spend ogs and ogs of money and ogs of time, right? They're just, you know, trying to get out of it, trying to be the best, trying to create a facade. Look at all the time they spend on their Instagram accounts and Facebook accounts to prove to you how much better off they are than you. And of course, it means nothing. And in the end, when you look back at it all, it was a big waste of time. And that's why our younger kids, they spend so much time on this big waste of time. A little wonder that in the 10 years before COVID and then in the post-COVID years, their suicide and suicidal contemplation rate has gone up not just by a factor of 100%, it's gone up like about 140%. And with young women, it's even higher than with young men. And by the way, the homicide rate has gone up, not the same 120, 140%. But I mean, it has also gone up spectacularly, like 35%, just in less than 15, 16 years. So, I mean, this is like, this is terrible. And of course, we got to get out of level two. And we got to move to contributive happiness, level three, transcendent happiness, that's level four, because that's the only way we can really have true hope, true happiness, et cetera. So that's where we stand today.
Well, the evil one has done a great job at trying to convince us that level one and level two are really where happiness lie, right? We even have the dangers of some Christian churches, you think of Joel Osteen and Lakewood Church, right? This prosperity gospel, right? That people buy into that if I do everything right, I'll be showered with all this stuff. And it's about the stuff. It's not about the relationship with Christ. And so even some Christians are buying into this because, we have preachers out there telling us that it's all about prosperity. And if you're not prosperous, then you're the loser. It's not God's fault.
Yeah, exactly. But of course, that has nothing to do with Jesus Christ, nothing to do with the Holy Spirit, and nothing to do with the New Testament scriptures. So for all intents and purposes, that's a very false notion of God and a very false notion of what Jesus expected. And the prosperity gospel is a very false gospel. So the main thing, of course, is if we go up to that transcendent level, we start participating in church services. We try to make a difference to people around us who are less fortunate than we. We try to follow the teachings of Jesus Christ, and we try to pray. We're just going to plain be happier. We may not have as much money. We may not have as much prestige as the guy down the street, but for all intents and purposes, we will have significantly lower depression rates, anxiety rates, et cetera, even without the stuff, even without the vanity privileges of, the ego comparison game, And so, the thought is to help people, like with this book, right? I want, if you're a Catholic and you know some people who are, kind of on the brink, or they were losing their faith, or, maybe they were Catholics and belong now to the second biggest religion, in the United States, ex-Roman Catholics, if you know a lot of people like that, give them this book. It's not going to hit them over the head with the Catholic Church. It's going to get them to the entry door of the Catholic Church, which is what we want them to do, but it'll do it based on psychiatry, philosophy, psychology, and of course the scientific evidence of God and Jesus, et cetera. And then finally, when you start moving into the area of religious services and prayer, then of course I come out of the closet. I say, I'm a Roman Catholic priest, and I would, my hope is that you'll go all the way here and move to the sacraments and the Holy Eucharist. But, the job is not to pressure, but to convince people on the basis of secular evidence, this is the way to go. And that was the reason for the text. I really did want to reach a very broad audience with a very popular tone to help them see that, you know, it's only, you know, by pursuing God, and in my view, pursuing Jesus Christ, that, you know, we got any chance whatsoever of having a higher degree of happiness in this lifetime. Of course, only in the next lifetime will happiness be perfected in God and perfected with the blessed who are in heaven through God. So, I mean, but right now, the best we're going to be able to do is have that faith and have a lot of friends who have that faith. And, you know, by, you know, having that friend, even though we might have our crosses, and even though we might have our problems, and even though our kids might be getting into trouble at school, and even though we might be having some difficulties at work, at the end of the day, there's still that security, there's still that mooring and anchoring in something of absolute and ultimate meaning and significance. And that's what, at the end of the day, we're living for. We're not living to be more intelligent than others. We're living to use the intelligence we've been given to make an optimal, positive contribution to others, and an optimal contribution to the kingdom of God to try and build it up. And if we do that, we're going to be happy, even if people don't recognize us, even if people ridicule us, even if people say, you know, I just don't profoundly disagree with you, and everything you stand for, I hate. You still, you know what? They can't take your happiness away from you because it's grounded in God. It's grounded in Jesus. You're going to be just fine. And of course, you know, I've had a few people try to bust my chops. Of course, I try to defend myself in the most objective and rational ways that I can. Yet at the end of the day, what really counts is I'm moored in Jesus. You can't take that away from me. And indeed, if that's where my happiness lies, I think that happiness will be eternal, and it will be on the level of perfect truth, love, goodness, beauty, and being, and home, and that'll make all the difference.
Respect Life Radio is produced by Catholic Charities in the Archdiocese of Denver, and remember, you can listen to all of our shows at respectliferadio.com.